One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gab fest. We're in a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, what we like to read, and who we like to read. Food for Thought, farting on dicks since 2006.
No!
Doesn't even make sense.
Just kidding.
Wait.
I just like the rhyme.
Farting on dicks is like when you just have air in you from being pounded so hard, and then you push the air out.
Literally physics.
And I that is really hot to me, both as a bottom and a top. When I know I'm clean, when I know the fart is just like lubey air.
Okay, yeah. Lubey air.
Yeah. Is that your drag name?
Yeah!
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage, Lubey air.
And you just get on and go.
That's it.
I am confused.
Have you ever used flavored condoms?
Yes. By accident.
Okay.
In college.
They're actually not for anal sex.
They're for oral sex.
Yeah.
Right? To promote healthy oral sex or whatever.
Yes.
But I've never. Would never.
Great
in theory, not in practice.
Fran has, what's the word? Taste?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Standards. Have a standard.
I just honestly like the taste of dick.
Flavored condoms.
Joe almost did a spit take.
Dick
flavored condoms.
I mean,
is
why
funny.
Not make it more complicated?
That's very
like a clean dick. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like maybe not. Or maybe there's like different shades. There's like the after gym dick, maybe.
But like when they shower before the gym, sometimes I have my boyfriend shower before the gym so I can suck his sweaty post gym dick, but it's like clean dirty.
Okay. That's nice. Honestly.
Romance.
Nice.
Romance.
That's a lot.
And they say romance is dead. Okay. Producer Alex is shaking her head.
So much to ask.
And we got a laugh out of the audio producer for the first time.
No, yes. That's not what it was.
Anyway, so. I'm so sorry, everybody.
Not laughing with you. I'm fine with that.
I am okay.
I know you are.
I am Tommy Teebs Pico, an indigenous American poet, screenwriter, single and actively mingling and facing the latter half of my mid-30s. My sexuality is being asleep. Thank you.
I'm Fran. I'm a writer. I'm an editor. And this week, Jane Fonda asked me my pronouns.
Oh, wow.
So I really, honestly, I don't have anything else to do. This is my peak. I'm done.
She can literally die happy. Hi. I'm Dennis Norris II, and I'm a reader and a writer, a lapsed feelist. And this morning, I had a salami Sammy, and I'm going to leave it up to y'all to determine whether or not that's a literal salami sandwich or a literal man named Sammy with a delightful salami.
No. It's a spicier salami.
No.
Was it provolone cheese?
And it was. Very spicy.
I'm Joseph Osmondson, scientist, nonfiction writer, and I always thought IPA stood for I Pound Ass.
Okay. I kind of that's whimsical.
That would be funny. Delivery.
That's totally mad. If it came from me, it would be a gangbusters. Dennis, why don't you tell us what we got on the menu today?
For tonight's episode, Teebs asks how far we've been. We offer truly sage advice. For our main discussion, we get centered, and for dessert, we get just a little bit blacker.
Taking away.
It's time we start the top of the show the way any good top should, with a little tease, our uproarious appetizer segment, Amuse Bouche.
Yes.
And to amuse your bouches this week, I have a game. It's a new game.
We are so scared.
We're premiering called As a Thought I Have... ...
Oh.
Because one of the things that I've found, you know, being on the road and like talking to fans, like interacting with people, is that they love how candid we are. And that we tell on ourselves all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that ostensibly we're whores.
I am disgusting.
Ostensibly. And as a representative of queerness, I think that it's important to keep it real. And sometimes keeping it real means, are we actually as slutty as we say we are, or are we not? Ooh. So I'm going to start one. Every single one is As a Thought I Have. I'm going to ask the question, then you have to say whether or not you have done that thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Okay. Oh,
so
God.
It's our version of never have I ever, right. Yes, I absolutely
Turning
have.
It into the affirmative.
Yes. as a thought I have, I'm going to start it out very vanilla. Mm, so okay. As a thought I have, made out with a friend.
Yes.
All the time. Mm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. I've made out with friends of my ex, which is a little different.
It's a little more pointed.
They were just people that I had wanted to fuck for a very long time. Mm. And then I actually didn't like the revenge aspect of it, but I did like the sex. And so I continued having sex with some of them.
You remain being unbearably ethical.
Yeah.
Truly, so annoying.
Also, I told my ex that I had sex with one of his friends. I also had a person I had a huge crush on throw himself at me, who was best friends with one of my exes, and I said no.
That's stupid.
I have absolutely made out with the exes of my friends.
Okay.
And continue
to be shameless about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Listen, you cut them loose, so.
All right. As a thought, I have been in a threesome.
In softballs. Yes, twice. Both of them were trash. Looking for a third time's the charm, though.
I definitely can barely handle a twosome. So. not my cup of tea.
Tommy?
Yes. As a thought, I have been spit roasted in a threesome.
Yep.
That is actually one of my fantasies.
It's so fun.
Honestly, what's the point of being in a threesome if you're not the one who's getting spit roasted?
It's so fun.
I've always wanted to be a giant hunk of meat. Absolutely everything I've ever wanted.
Yeah. Not quite, but almost.
In my first impure thought of the show, I described it as being feeling like a weird accordion.
You were being played.
That's funny. Oh, my God.
As a thought, I have been in the peanut gallery at a sex party.
Yep.
As the observer.
Yep. Mm-mm.
No. Sex party's not really my tea.
Gotcha.
Same.
But I would never be a watcher. I would get way too anxious. Mm. I would have to be involved or not there at all.
It's okay. Actually, for me, this is Joe, it's one of the ways that I make going to sex parties less pressure and more fun. That I'm like, oh, if I just go and watch, it's still hot because, you know, it's like watching porn in real life.
That's a great
and
way to frame it.
It takes the pressure off of me to do a certain thing. And it's like, oh, if I go and no one finds me hot, I'm going to be so embarrassed. No, I'm just going to go and watch. And that, if that's all I get, that's great. That's already
and also,
really
that's
good.
What some people want.
Yeah.
They're exhibitionists.
They want to be watched. Yeah. And if you get off by watching, it's like a really nice way to have a low-pressure sex party experience.
As a thought, I have been ass up at the sex party. This is really only for you because the rest of us
Are we even playing?
I have actually only ever bottomed. I have been ass up at the sex party, but it's only ever been for a person that I know.
Okay.
The person I'd go to the party with.
Mm. Oh, interesting.
Okay. As a thought, I have taken someone's pants off with my teeth.
Oh, yes.
That is one of your favorite things to talk
I
about,
know.
Tommy. You're just asking this
just
for
bragging.
You so you can talk about it.
It's so fun, though.
It's definitely a sober move,
I have
to
pulled
say.
Underwear off with my teeth.
Nice.
Oh, yeah,
pants
yeah.
is impractical.
It was denim, the button and the zipper. Thank you so much.
After all of that work that was done on my orthodontia.
As a thought, I have done face and hand stuff in public.
Ooh. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Like not just like face and hand stuff. Like full hand inside pants. Mm. Like just like fully cupping finger in the butthole. In a crowded room.
Where was this? How public is public?
I mean, wow. I mean, let me just go through the catalog of times that I've done this because it's my favorite thing to do. I mean, I've done this at a birthday party, like a not that crowded birthday party.
Wow.
I've done it at parties that I've thrown when I used to throw parties at the Standard in East Village. I've done it at crowded gay parties.
I am shocked.
Oh, it's my favorite. I've done it in an empty stairwell in a warehouse in Bushwick.
Okay, yes. Well, that's like a thought rite of passage. So.
Right.
To be honest.
Oh,
yeah. Oh,
my God. As a thought, I have sucked a dick at the gym.
No, I wish. No. I hate the gym. Mm. And I hate everyone at the gym.
What
and
about if
you don't have to not hate someone to suck their D, Fran?
No, it is actually a thing.
What about at your boxing gym when they turn the lights off?
No, because I'm only in a room with straight white women. It's literally, truly the There's target demographic no of boxing. I, for the context, I go boxing every day, and I'm there with just 30 other white ladies.
Other being the key word there.
Yeah.
As a thought I have, and you partially already answered this, but done sex stuff in a bathroom during a party.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
At least twice. Oh, yeah. No, many, much more than twice. My favorite was New Year's Eve a few years ago, I had promised myself that I would not have sex with anyone terrible as my New Year's resolution.
Oh, I remember.
I remember this.
And it took you all of 2 hours.
Well, here's the thing. Different witnesses say what time I went into the bathroom to get plowed. Okay, so according to my memory.
Can we roll the security tapes really quick?
Yes, according to my memory, I did it 20, 30 minutes before midnight. And this guy was garbage, an ex from 2 years before from Indiana, just trash person. And he got, frankly, less attractive with age. Mm. And then other sources say that it was an hour after midnight.
Wow. Mm.
So it took you 1 hour to break your New Year's resolution.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
The sources have not been corroborated.
As a thought, I have done sex stuff in the bathroom during a baby shower.
Okay, Tommy, would you like to share something?
I also planned the baby shower.
Oh my God!
And
look on producer Alex's face.
All I
she
have
is
to
done.
Say, well, the great thing about the people who I know who've had children and who've had baby showers is they didn't want to do the games. They didn't want to do the presents. Right. They just wanted their friends to come over and drink. And okay. I was like, I can make that happen.
Right.
And then, I was one of the groom's childhood friends and are just kind of, well, anyway, I'm not going to say any more about that.
Wow.
As a thought, I have done a line off someone's dick.
I've never done cocaine.
What's so funny is I was talking to my friend last night who happens to be a porn actor, Ty Mitchell, if you're listening to this, and he was telling me about how he had a rule at a party wherein he would only do blow if other people would do it off of his asshole.
Oh, okay.
Which was a shock from, I never heard of that before, that sounds, sounded appealing to me.
The physics of
off
that
a dick,
are
not
a little...
so much. It goes right in the little divot before the hole.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense? Yeah, there's a little divot right before the hole.
The
little
right
pocket.
Up here. Yeah.
But after the tailbone.
Really yes. As a thought, I have used cummies as lube.
Oh, no. Yes.
Yes. Yes, I have.
Have you done it with one person's cummies for another person?
No.
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 I definitely have as well. But it's not my tea.
Okay. As a thought, I have... shat on someone's dick or left an elf shoe on the sheets.
Yeah.
I have not.
You told us about an elf shoe recently.
That was me. Yeah. I was like, no.
It was a little skid mark maybe, Dennis, that you left?
You're the only person who's ever said skid mark on this show.
No. I definitely have. Maybe twice.
And I remember afterwards, I was so ashamed. And then my friend, John Joseph, was like, oh, for the love of God. Yeah. It's a butt and
a butt.
Shit comes out of it. It's not like, it's not like, oh, like shit came out of your ear.
Yeah,
you know what's so funny? Yeah. I wasn't ashamed because I was so mad about my sheets.
I have nice sheets. That's an investment.
I do wash and fold, and I sometimes wonder what the wash and fold people think.
Oh, they are judging the fuck out of you.
The things that I've, the travesties that I have brought to the wash
them.
And fold.
Oh,
I
you do. Really should tip.
Oh, I really
Oh my God. As a thought, I have caught a little bit of dookie while giving a rim job.
Oh, yeah.
I have fed a little bit of Dookie while getting a rim job.
Oh my God.
It was an accident.
Not to kink shame, but that is.
It was not a kink. It was not on purpose.
This was purely on
purpose. There was too much 7-Eleven pizza that day.
Yes.
No such thing as too much 7-Eleven pizza, Tommy. Oh, you sacrilegious.
didn't we have a story? Didn't we have an impure thought about someone who was eating ass and the guy farted into their mouth?
Oh,
I feel like that's the thing we said on the podcast. Anyway, just wanted to recall that.
Well, thank you so much for playing this As I Thought I Have.
Disgusting.
We are actually way more disgusting than I thought we were. I didn't know about all that.
Wow.
I am not surprised.
Cha-ching! Get out your coin purses, benches. It's time for Penny for Your Thought.
You!
That's right. And today, we have some questions from the audience over tour. Because while we were, touring, we had crowdsourced a lot of different questions. And
could not answer
so all of them. Yeah, and some of y'all are just truly... Help.
Help. And unfortunately, we can't really be the ones to help you,
but nevertheless, we will. First one's a bit of a softball, to say.
Stretch it over my face.
Yes, as you will. Advice for first-time users of cock rings.
Huh.
I think actually, let's preface this with, what is a cock ring, Joe?
I mean, it's just, it's they can be made of metal. They're typically made of some sort of stretchy rubber or plastic. And they are a little circle, a little ring that you put over your anatomy. Your little dicky and ballsy goes through there.
I don't like euphemisms when we're talking about sex.
The way in which they work is that it helps you stay hard, mm-hmm. because the blood flow into your dick is through the base, and the blood flow out of your dick is through the surface. So it kind of traps the blood flow out of your dick, which is what makes your dick hard.
Would you say it keeps you engorged?
It keeps you engorged. Right.
It also makes it look perky. It's like a facelift for your penis.
It's a facelift, for your peen. And sort of, if you have issues, I know a lot of people who have issues when they top with just that feeling of like, I'm worried that it's not going to get or stay hard. Mm-hmm. And a cock ring can help with that. It's just a little, confidence, a booster.
Mm-hmm. So first time users?
Who here has used a cock ring?
I used it all the time. I've also used it. I have a
You're using it right now.
I have a cock ring that's attached to a butt plug. It's a cock ring.
They're so fun.
Cock rings are two for one. And that
sounds like a good time.
It's a little bit of like a, you have some assembly required kind of moment. I do adore it.
It's like one of those things that like an earring that goes to a nose ring.
Yeah. It's literally exactly like that. Yeah. Or like those faggots that like went to Urban Outfitters once and they have the nose ring attached to the earring.
Right.
Anyways.
How do you find the right size?
Well, it depends on what kind of pain you have.
Yeah. And what kind of ball. It's like a lot of the ball thickness as well.
Okay.
But I do feel like they really, I have only ever seen like two sizes.
Did they let you try them on?
They don't.
They have very big ones and very small ones.
Have you ever like put on one that was a little too small and you were like,
yes. And so it's good in general. The stretchy ones, if you're a first time user, mm-hmm. You can go a little bit, you can get one a little maybe smaller than you think you need, but you can really stretch them quite large. So that is a good way to start if you don't quite know your size yet. Also, I have the issue where I have a little bit of a big ball situation. So the metal ones I can't get on because it doesn't like.
Yeah, I only use rubber. I don't have any metal coverings.
I think the more forgiving to begin with. You maybe start with something not super duper tight and see how it feels, and then maybe get tighter as you have a little more confiance.
And you don't have to wear it during sex. I mean, true. I've talked about this on the pod. Like, one of the hottest things I've ever seen was this guy that I was at a swim party at, where he was just like wearing one under his Speedo.
And it's
I was
so
like,
hot.
Just for fun. So it made the bulge a little bit better.
It did make the bulge a little bit better.
And on Food for Thought, we love the bulge.
We love a bulge.
I am a non-binary trans person, and I recently got a job at a bakery. All my coworkers are lovely cishet women.
Boo.
And glorious typo, refer to the bowl scrapers as bowel scrapers.
What? No!
This is wild.
I would pay.
Can you please tell it was slide into the DMs with where this bakery is?
Can you please record some of this?
They say, how do I explain to them that they're making the greatest gay joke of all time? Okay, that's an easy answer.
You don't. This is a gift, a blessing into the world.
Yes.
Let it ride.
By telling them, you would be blocking that blessing, and you don't want to.
You don't want to. We don't want blessings in 2020.
No, count your blessings, and that's one of them.
Please make it into a TikTok and add us. Please.
Oh my God. That would go viral.
So glad that we addressed that. Anyway.
You're welcome.
How do you navigate professional, especially academic spaces where queerness and sexuality are censored or deemed inappropriate?
Joe?
I mean, we all, you know, I mean, you know, Tommy is a professional poet, so might not deal with this.
And I'm also at the house all the time. And actually, you know what? It is queer. I police queerness in my house for sure.
Yeah. You know, I'm an academic. It's hard. I mean, I think that there isn't a right answer for everybody. I am very, very queer at work, but it's been a journey. I started out being a little less queer, and I would like not have my hair cut into a fashion mullet or not wear fingernail polish.
You had a mullet at one point?
I did.
A fashion one?
I would cut it off before I would teach because it just, I didn't feel comfortable being that visibly queer in the classroom. And
I would have asked you to cut it off.
For the sake of our eyes.
So maybe unseemly. The heteros were right.
I think. You know, there is risk in being visibly queer at work when you work in conservative spaces. The fact of you being there challenges the status quo. Yeah. So there's really no right or wrong answer. And, you know, having trusted people in those spaces is important. Having mentors really helps. And then trying your hardest to find academic or professional spaces that are more accommodating, more accepting of your full humanity. What do you think, Fran?
I feel like there are a lot of people who might be listening that'll be like, that would have expected us to be like, fuck the patriarchy, fuck the system, like, wear, present however you want, like, be your true self. And that's just like not the reality we live in.
For the most part, you should not be,
you know, doing things that will endanger you or your financial stability if those are things that you need right now.
Because ultimately, if we're talking about the long con, the long run, like, you do still have to pay the light bill,
right?
The rent.
And my previous job at Out Magazine, I was lucky enough to work exclusively with queer and trans people. So like we were sending each other like pornographic memes on Slack.
I remember like the job before that you were in the group chat all the time being like, guess what these motherfuckers said?
Yes.
In the office
today.
Oh my God, today.
White girl Chelsea. Oh, loved her. I do think a lot, when I think about the job that I have now, I'm really grateful that I have coworkers that are very sex positive and, you know, very progressive when it comes to thinking about these things. But I still find myself being like, this has not been talked about in an office setting yet. I'm going to be the first person to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you've kind of tested the waters and have level set, you know, a certain, you know, boundaries and communication levels with your coworkers, you know, test those waters. I think sex positivity can be a great thing at work if you're not an idiot about it. You know what I mean?
I definitely don't talk about this type of stuff at work. Like, I just don't. Mm-hmm. My coworkers wouldn't be here for it, but I don't let it stop me from talking about it on this podcast. Mm-hmm. That's sort of like the
compromise. And doing it in other places in your life.
And doing it in my work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I talk because I'm insufferable a lot about the double bind of capitalism. It's like either you endanger your income or you don't live your whole self.
Yeah.
And that is just something we negotiate all the time. So I've made choices where I'm a little bit more, you know, sort of, I guess, quote unquote, status quo or traditional when I'm in my office. But then I don't let it. It's terrifying to make a podcast like this and know that it could endanger my job.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, I refuse to live with that sort of fear dictating my actual choices.
But also,
I
agree jobs with you. Suck fundamentally.
Yes. Yes.
You know, to some degree for everybody.
I just want to talk a little bit about, we have a lot of listeners on the show actually who work in education and who work in nonprofits. And so my entire sort of like adult career life has been working in the educational field in the nonprofit sector, which is in some ways a unique place because it like purports to be all about social justice and equality. But a lot of times, It just reifies the status quo. And so for me, when I was at my last job, I thought that it was going to be a really safe place to work in as a queer person. My CEO was a queer woman. The sport of figure skating is often considered to be a queer sport. And it sort of was in terms of me talking about the idea of being gay. But as I began to sort of uncover and understand in a deeper way my gender identity and the ways in which I wanted to express myself on a daily basis, I had to really take a page out of what Fran was talking about earlier in terms of testing the waters, in terms mm-hmm. of when I was going to work. Did I feel comfortable wearing a dress that day or a woman's top? Did I feel comfortable wearing boots that had high heels? Like, how far was I going to go? And I got actually snide comments from the CEO and from the people who were in charge. Mm-hmm. And so when you're dealing with those things, it's so important to remember and understand also like how far you feel comfortable pushing the boundaries in terms of what you feel your job security is and what you feel your financial security is. And also, what are your resources in that scenario and in that setting? A lot of times, if you're at a smaller nonprofit, you don't have like a formal HR system. And so you have to work kind of in different ways to make sure that certain kinds of incidents are reported if that's something that you want to do. Board members are often a really great resource for that kind of thing. But it's just to remember the idea that like, once you start making those decisions, it's okay to move slowly and it's okay to look in the mirror sometimes and say, this might be what I want to do, but I don't feel safe doing that today. And that's completely okay.
This message comes from iHeartRadio sponsor, Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should really think about getting a quote from Mercury, because Californians save an average of $677 with Mercury. It's quick and easy, and in just a few minutes, you might find you could save a lot of money on your auto and home insurance. Plus, Mercury was named one of America's best insurance companies by Insure.com 4 years in a row. Low rates, big discounts, great insurance. Go to MercuryInsurance.com today to get a quote.
It's time we got to the meat of our discussion,
the thought process spelled T-H-O-T.
T-H-O-T.
And
T-H-O-T.
To sling your micro meat this week, it's
again.
Joe.
Again. It's not the size, it's the motion of the ocean. Okay,
that's
everybody.
Right. Okay. Not choppy. We are not a dick sizest podcast.
No, I agree.
That's, well, yeah.
Tommy,
I
mean, Dennis. You started.
Those were still waters if we're talking about the motion of the ocean, okay?
Tommy just wants to go to sleep. Okay, everyone. We're talking today about centrism. Frankly, 2020 is an interesting time in these United States. In the Obama years, when I called myself a Marxist, people literally would laugh in my face. Leftist views didn't make sense to those folks in America in the 21st century. But to me, they were the only thing that made sense as I watched wars rage on, as I saw people impacted by the prison systems, as the signs of climate change became all the more obvious, and as Obama himself drone bombed the shit out of brown folks in Pakistan. And then Trump held up a mirror to our political climate, and people saw just how badly neoliberal capitalism had failed us. The status quo is killing us. The center, I argue, will not hold. But I actually had to, you know, I grew up in a place where the center was Republican. Like, I just grew up in a very conservative place.
Right.
And I actually had to recover from my own sort of ties to the status quo and to centrism, even as I was starting to understand that centrism and the status quo were not in my material interests. Mm-hmm. So to start, I want to ask the question, can you think of a time that you actually had to confront your own centrism? And what was the thing that made you reconsider it or click you out of like understanding that the status quo is not actually serving your interests?
Mm. I feel like my whole childhood was like surrounded by discourse of seeing both sides and
totally.
Being moderate. And like, I mean, my parents were registered as Republican up until, you know, the Obama era. And there are just a lot of things, I think, in my growing up where I was preconditioned to be like, oh, no, like, both sides are good. Like, you always have to think about both sides, mm-hmm. which is kind of wild. But I think that's also a very Midwestern ideal. I grew up in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I grew up in Ohio, and I'm sort of going to echo that with Fran. My parents were not registered Republicans, but my mom voted Republican for a lot of my for a lot of my years growing up. I remember specifically from 1996, I think until 2008 or 2012, she voted Republican. My dad was a staunch Democrat. And then when I went to the high school that I went to, which was this really sort of wealthy, conservative, all-boys prep school, I was surrounded for the first time with like a lot of teenagers who also felt the same way. And so I had never really thought about politics, but I remember that my freshman year was the 2000 election. And so having, being around these political conversations and sort of not having a particular background that I came from, coming from a home that was a little bit split, I remember very specifically thinking for a few months, I might be a Republican. Like, maybe that makes sense. Like, maybe that's what I need to do to sort of be okay in this environment as well, because I was really, really struggling at that school at that time, and I just like wanted to connect with people. That passed quickly. I'll say that
she dipped a toe in.
She dipped the toe in
those waters.
What about you, Tommy?
I'm really struggling with this question, not because I think I'm virtuous or anything, but because I grew up on an Indian reservation, and so I feel like that, like, you can't grow, you can't. Politically,
yeah,
I don't think it was possible for me in that time. My father was a part of the American Indian movement. Like, they went to go occupy Alcatraz. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I grew up in a very radicalized family already. Yeah. Like, from jump, I went to my first protest when I was in fifth grade. So, like, it, that part of the political part, I don't, like, my parents were socialists. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, so it was different for me politically, but sexually, I do felt like it was more conservative.
Wow.
Mm. You know, there was like. Internalized homophobia that I had to get over, for sure. That kind of status quo of, like, things were between men and women, you know, that kind of a stuff. Like, that was still, like, at the time, reinforced culturally for me, that I had to, like, confront and get over and deal with and understand that my but I don't know, that I was also just like a fucking fairy from jump. Like, I was never, I never had a coming out thing, because I was never an in thing.
People just always knew.
One of my aunties went up and told my mom, like, I think Tommy has an identity crisis. And she was like, if you talk about my son in front of me like that again, I will bust you in the mouth.
Yeah.
And like, so it was like, so I think I grew up a little bit like different than everybody else.
Yeah.
But it was a very, like, outside of the reservation was extremely conservative. But it was like inside, it was this like, I don't know, humidor.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, Son of Baldwin has this incredible, Son of Baldwin runs a great Facebook page. And he has an incredible quote that says something like, you know, we can disagree and love one another unless our disagreement is about something that's actively oppressing me, right? If you're a racist, we're not going to disagree about your racism.
So it was like sexuality stuff, but also fat phobia.
Oh,
that was like a kind of thing that I thought of as like, it was reinforced that my parents were just like, for whatever reason, I don't know how they caught diet culture.
Yeah. Oh,
but that was one of the ones that like they transmitted to me.
Me too.
That
for
there
sure.
was like some kind of ideal of thinness that meant virtue.
Yeah. And absolutely.
And that being not thin means you're lazy and all of those horrible things that we're socialized to believe.
Y'all are like touching on something that I like wrote down when we were talking about like the impetus for this episode, in that, like, you know, the artifice of like both sides, it truly goes away when one of the sides is inciting violence of some kind, right? Like, and so more often than not, we like, I think a lot about, you know, certain like TV specials that have gone up, or like cultural objects where it's just like, you know, a comedian takes it too far and attacks like a marginalized group, and people are like, it's comedy, you know, like what's wrong with that, like, you know, we should be able to make jokes about everything. And it's like, no, actually, like, it's not about like comedians getting like the fair ball game of like truly all content at large, right? It's the fact that you are saying something that actually incites violence and can literally hurt people, because you're teaching people how to hurt people.
Well, okay, I will agree, but I will also say that in my mind, and we can talk through this, but in my mind, it also depends on which way that conflict is going. Is it going to incite violence towards people who are marginalized by the system? Right? I mean, like, are you punching down or are you sort of punching up? And I only say this because, like, again, growing up on a reservation, I did feel, and I don't necessarily feel this anymore, but I did feel growing up like an incredible rage.
Yeah.
Like, growing up in a community where people were slaughtered for centuries and hunted and like literally put on like the first POW camps in America, which are reservations. And then feeling like I wanted my pound of flesh. You know, like I wanted, and that it only seemed like the way that I would get that was violently. I think that's I think that's patriarchy. When systems of repair are left in charge of men, they often become like rageful and violent. I had to see myself out of that rage.
That said, as we've talked about on the show before, I think anger is a very useful tool. I think rage, I think that the ways that those energies can manifest themselves into something that is proactive, to something that is resistance, to something that, you know, impacts change. I believe in that.
You're right, Fran. And I think one of the other things that centrism does is it says that discourse has to take place within this sphere, right? We have to be like civil. It's like that civility conversation that, you know, Antifa, because they're out there doing things like punching Nazis, is somehow as evil as being
an actual Nazi.
Right,
which is not true.
And there are all these myths of centrism in America, and that's one of them, right? This notion of civil discourse, when it's like you can have civil discourse about, you know, killing queer and trans people. Those people are dying. That is incivil. And so, like, the discourse is allowed to be incivil in response to that. I think a lot about Malcolm X's notion of self-defense, right? That if our community is being attacked with systemic violence, that we need to take any means necessary to defend ourselves. And that's not being inherently violent, but it is acknowledging that violence is being done to us.
And that you can't equivocate literal Nazis with just not wanting black people to die.
Exactly, right? You know? And then the other thing I think about in terms of the American culture of centrism is this notion of objectivity, right? That journalists have to be quote-unquote objective as though anything can be quote-unquote objective, right? Mm-hmm. That they're, you know, what we want is like fair and balanced. And everything has a political outlook, right? There are other, you know, I think of my time living in France, and in France, everyone acknowledges that like Le Monde is kind of the center newspaper and Figaro is kind of far right. And that's just it's like the Wall Street Journal, right? Mm-hmm. Is more conservative than the New York Times, and the Nation is more, you know, sort of lefty. Mm-hmm. Okay. But Americans, our fucking minds are blown by that. And it seems like bias, right? Also, the status quo is a bias, right? It's just we don't see it because we are cultured to believe that that's the normal and that the normal is necessary.
As a recovering journalist, I can just say that I also do not believe in like unbiased media, period. The Associated Press wants to be that, you know, and other, you know, outlets like it. That's just like not a thing.
Well,
like, we are humans, we have perspective.
And who develops the standards? People.
Exactly.
And people have biases. And especially if, like, your purport, like, and if each media outlet is in charge of their own reporting, then what they deem to be balanced is going to change with each one of them.
Of course.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then, I think of like Fox News, and I think of Roger Ailes, and I think of like people talk so much about like the divided political moment as if divisions didn't exist before. I think people have like some people have a voice that they didn't have before.
Yeah.
But I do think that Roger Ailes is the architect of so much of what is foul about what's happening
right now.
And Rupert Murdoch. Yeah.
Well, and the other thing, that the right has outflanked us so hard. They understand postmodernism better than most people do. They have, you know, postmodernism comes in and says, hey, everyone has a bias. You know, there is no such thing as objectivity. And then the right comes in there and is basically nihilist about that, which means you can't trust anybody. You know, it's the deep state. It's the liberal media. It's this, it's that.
Right. And somebody read George Orwell and was like, that's all we gotta do.
Oh, there. We're going there. And so it's like they are so good at not just maintaining the status quo, but in the past 20 years in this country, the center has moved
so far
that, like, again, this notion of centrism is absurd, that we should fucking sit down and have conversations with literally people who want to exterminate large groups of humans on this planet.
And with corporations that are poisoning our water. I think of like Winona LaDuke saying, someone needs to explain to me why wanting clean drinking water makes you an activist.
Exactly.
And why proposing to destroy water with chemical warfare doesn't make you a terrorist.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
And to continue to apply it to, like, you know, things actually happening in our country right now, or even honestly to like Bombshell, to like thinking about that movie and like what that movie was trying to do. Like, the, as much as I was entertained by like, you know, Margot Robbie and Charlize Theron and like the lesbian B plot that was like discarded very quickly, like I do feel like I was like, I walked out of the theater and I was like, why did we need to humanize people at Fox News, who like, you literally, like, if you work there, you don't have a soul. Like, I use this is like not how it is. Like, it, there, and that movie almost sought out to seek a center, right? Almost sought out to see both sides.
The thing is, like, what nuance does exist,
right?
What is its portrayal attempting to do in this particular media?
And I think honestly, I don't want to talk about this too much because we have a whole other episode to talk about it. But like, the election is another great example of that. We have a lot of different candidates that are trying to either achieve moderation and centrism and all the different stuff, or they're trying to truly stand up for what they believe in and to like stick to their guns and be like, this is what I've believed this whole time. This is what will create actual impactful change. And I don't care who it polarizes.
Pete Buttigieg always only ever believed in power and the status quo.
Yeah.
He is not.
Sorry, honey.
I would like my first gay president not to have bombed children in Afghanistan. Like, you know what I mean?
Not
like,
to have worked at McKinsey. Yeah. You know,
She believes that people in prison shouldn't vote.
I'm curious how y'all have dealt with. So there was this Atlantic article that talked about the different types of centrists. Ooh. That there were ambivalent centrists, apathetic centrists, compromising centrists, and impossible centrists. And as I was like looking through each type, I was thinking about like my dating history. Ooh. And I'm curious how y'all have dealt with, if you have dealt with, centrist gays.
What are you talking about?
Or like, in some ways, are they like apolitical centrist, ambivalent centrist, compromising centrist, impossible centrist?
Dennis has fucked a Republican?
I mean, you are truly speaking my language right now. White centrist dick was a specialty of mine for a long time.
A delicacy?
A delicacy.
Say no more.
Well, you can't call it a delicacy when it's not rare.
Once again, talking in Real Housewives quotes, even though you've never seen that show. The fuck?
Have never seen it, will never see it, even though I love Sheree Whitfield from Cleveland. So first of all, my entire, like, every dick I sucked in high school was a Republican dick. That's just the way it was.
Right. That's a product of the environment.
What was more interesting to me
Wait a minute. Did that then orient you towards Republican dick for the rest of your...
I have been telling you guys for years, Stockholm Syndrome is real.
Stockholm Syndrome?
That is the problem. That is the problem. Oh, my God. Wow. No, but I did a lot of work in my like adulthood to kind of like free myself of that as just so many things started to change. And so what was wild for me was in 2015, I dated this guy who kind of he kind of like slipped through the cracks. I assumed he was one crack in particular. We met on like either Grindr or Jacked or something like that, and we struck up a conversation. He was a super cute, like almost cherub faced, curly haired, like white boy, and we had a great conversation. What should have tipped me off though was that one day we started talking, and he was coming back from having visited like a historical like war. Like place, like a historical war, like
monument, museum, battleground,
yes, like a battleground. Thank you, like a battleground in New Jersey. That should have tipped me off, but like it didn't. I did not even think of that.
Here we go.
And I assumed that he would be like really political because he was a painter, and I just thought that all artists understood that art is inherently political and that it's Thomas Kincaid out there
ready to throw a brick at Stonewall.
I fully thought that. Anyway, we've been dating for like 6 weeks, and I text him during one of the Republican debates. This is fall of 2015. And I'm like, oh, are you watching such and such? I don't remember what it was, but I'm like, you're watching such and such. And he just absolutely just goes, I'm not political. I'm not watching this. And my mind was blown because I was like, you are gay, and you're like, you talk about loving queer people of color in particular.
But he was a white dude.
And I was just like, that doesn't make sense to me in this day and age. Like, you can't just sort of turn your face away and still expect to be like on the right side of history when it's getting to be so difficult.
Dennis.
So What?
Did you fuck him again after that?
We might have had one more date.
Oh, the centrism is coming from inside the house.
He had a really big dick.
Stop! That dick does not stand in front of the politics. I don't know. That's not how I speak about my friends. I guess you didn't disagree with him, but it's like, right. You know, when your friend is wrong for something, and you're just like, yeah, you're wrong. Like what you said, like you're wrong for that.
You're wrong.
You know, we're gonna talk about it, and then as friends, we're probably going to get over it somehow. If I can't,
but Teebs, I actually don't have any friends. I don't think that aren't. Like way left, you know, like left of center politically. I have a hard time. It makes me, especially in this day and age, it's so violent to me, right? To be a centrist or to be a Republican. I can't allow that type of energy into my friend sphere.
I don't really think I do either, but there are certain times when you're just dating as a person in the world when, you know, I just assume that everyone's going to be like us. And then, you know, 2 weeks into it, he's like, wait, what does MAGA stand for?
Right.
You're like, oh, how do you not know? But then I also sometimes, like, you know, you'll be on, like, because I travel a lot. I was on a plane one time next to this lady, and we were talking very jovial. We, you know, had like a fun conversation. She gave me some gummy bears. It's always a good sign for me. Unfortunately, they were not edibles. They were regular gummy bears, but I'll look past it. And then and it was like a cross-country flight. So it was like 6 hours of us paying attention to ourselves. And then as we're like descending into New York, I look over and she's watching Fox News. And I was like, they look just like us.
Sometimes they do. And sometimes they want our friendship just like this is white women who aren't Republicans.
But then it turns out she was watching Samantha Bee making fun of a segment of Fox News.
You never know. On these travels, someone sitting next to me, this was a couple, and they were sharing the following book, Triggered by Donald Trump Jr.
God.
Do you know people, like friends of yours, who are like, they feel sort of obligated to follow some of these people on Twitter or something like that? Because they're just like, well, I mean, we should be seeing this from all angles.
I
do.
So I actually, I signed myself up for a bunch of Republican listservs years ago in the George W. Bush era because I felt like it was important to monitor the rhetoric of my enemy, you know what I mean? To sort of understand the rhetorical tools that they're using to sort of do their center, right wing activism.
Same, but I tried, I tried to watch Fox News.
It's a lot.
One or two times. And I was just like, I have blood pressure to think about.
It's a lot. Yes. It's a lot. The longer we go in this era, I mean, we're also so inundated with that stuff because the president is just spouting all of that nonsense all of the time. It's just pure fucking right-wing propaganda. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I used to have to go in search of those things because it wouldn't be in my bubble. And now it's just there all the fucking time. So I feel much less obligation to spend my actual time searching out things that are going to make me fucking pissed.
Right, because white supremacy is coming down the pipeline want it or not.
Go for it.
I was just going to say, like, kind of on the because also being friends with people versus dating them is very different. Like, when it comes to the friend conversation, every so often I have met someone who I discovered was, like, on a different end of the other end of the political spectrum from me. Maybe not, like, very far right, but people who were voting Republican. And so, like, I became really close with someone in graduate school, and they actually said something that made me realize in our very first conversation, I think that person's a Republican. And we managed to become incredibly close friends. And I can, say that I've never felt more loved and cared for in a friendship relationship than in my relationship with this person. But the other thing I'll say is that, like, I can understand how some people want to, like, spend time with those people in their lives and try and get them to be on the right side. And, like, after the 2012 election, this friend's politics started to change really dramatically in those next few years. Like, she had a baby. She saw the world very, very differently. Now she's, like, really far on the left side of things. And it's been a sort of beautiful thing about our friendship because we both see each other in these much fuller ways. And so I guess I will say, while it's never our, like, responsibility to necessarily have to do that, every so often there might be a person that works their way into your life that is worth spending some time with and working on them in these ways.
But and you can be Captain Save a Hoe.
And that can be okay.
Are you a white woman whisperer, Dennis?
Actually, you are. It's amazing.
I mean,
I think something else that we're all touching on that maybe is a good note to end on is, like, if you have someone in your life who maybe is not on the right side, or, you know, what Tommy likes to talk about a lot of the times is, like, there's a difference between complicit in something and being conscripted in something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or if it's family, you know, you can't choose your family, right?
Mm-hmm. I think a lot about, a while ago there was this viral clip from Project Runway wherein Carly Claus was called out for being related to the Kushners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because she's married to a Kushner.
Yeah. She's married to a Kushner. And so there are a few hairy things that go into this. One among them being that we don't know a ton about Carly Claus's actual liberal views and her husband's, other than the fact that they are liberal leaning and they are voting as Democrats again.
And they voted against Trump. And they plan to vote against Trump in 2020.
Right. But, you know, I think that, you know, I don't want to get on here and defend Carly Claus by any means. However, I immediately was like, I was like, oh, that, like, sucks. She was, like, conscripted into this thing. She kind of fell in love with a person, unluckily. You know what I mean?
And she was 19 when she met him.
But the difference to me is, like, if you are if you're in a situation that is similar to Carly Claus's, all you have to do is get on a public platform and be like, fuck Trump. Like, that's the difference, right?
Yeah.
You stand up for things that you believe in, even if it's hard and it hurts people and makes things more complicated for you, right? Yeah. Like, don't be a coward. Like, stand up and tell people what you actually believe in. If you're silence will not protect you, obviously, quoting Audre Lorde, but and aside from that, you know, it'll only last so long,
right? Yep. Yeah. That's Meghan Markle's, like, listen, I'm being Canada.
Love my god, be the Meghan Markle in all of us.
I'm feeling full, but, like, I could fit one more thing inside of me. Dennis knows how I feel
always.
And our dessert this week is The Blackening. So The Blackening is a short, Comedy Central short. You can find it on YouTube right now. That was recently announced that is going to become a feature. Now, the conceit of The Blackening is it's a group of black friends being chased through the woods by a serial killer. And he corners them in this house. And the main person who is the love of Joe's life. Just kidding. But the first person who falls and, like, you think is getting killed by the serial killer, he comes back in the house and he's like, listen, the serial killer kind of got fucked up because, you know, in these movies, the first person that he kills is the black person, but we were all black. And so, like, he didn't know what to do with that. And because when I fell, I sounded like a white woman, he kind of just let me go. But what he said was he'll let the rest of us go if we give him the blackest one of us.
Oh my God.
And so it is 5 minutes of each one of them trying to prove to the others that they aren't as black as the others. So one of them is like, I watch Gilmore Girls every day and I let my daughter call me a bitch. And then one of them is like, I'm not the blackest because I let my dog kiss me on the mouth.
Oh, that's funny.
And then one of them is like, they're like, no, you're the blackest. Like, you're from Africa. And he's like, but I'm from South Africa. Like Charlize
Theron.
And then they're like, they're the one, like, then they turn to the one who's gay and they're like, what about you? And you're like, I mean, I couldn't be sacrificed because I'm black and gay. And they're like, no, but you could be. And he was like, I voted for Trump.
No.
And so then the final thing that they do is then they say, like, okay, the person, like, everyone, spill your backpacks onto the table, and the person who has hot sauce is the blackest one.
Oh my.
And we send him outside. And it happens to be the gay one. And they send him outside and they're all looking, like, really guilty. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, but for real though, like, how many of you had hot sauce? And they all kind of start to pull them out of their pockets and their backpacks and put them on the table. And they're like, but no, he had to die. He voted for Trump.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
It's so fucking good. It is starring black gay stand-up comedian who I adore, Dwayne Perkins. So fucking hilarious. Check out his Instagram. He's amazing. And he's gonna co-write the feature, actually. Mm. So,
oh, it's gonna be made into a movie.
Yeah. You know, just beyond this short and the movie that's gonna come out of it, check out his stand-up comedy. It's
breakout role.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, so just shout out to my cousin Tyler McIntosh, who helped to produce this segment at Comedy Central.
Yes.
We like to do cute things in our family. And I just want to say that I felt extreme. I am sure that in no way was I like, did I inspire anything in this? But the character who says she lets her daughter call her a bitch and she watches Gilmore Girls every single day. I mean, that one is me. I do watch Gilmore Girls every single day. And she's she's, well, like a couple times a week.
Some other highlights from that were, I'm not black. My favorite seasoning is mayonnaise. One of them was like, I prefer kale to greens.
Wow. I do prefer kale to greens.
One of them thought that quinoa had something to do with Kwanzaa. Like, it was just, it's so hilarious.
Just one-liners.
Yes. I'm not sure how they're going to turn this short into a feature, but I am so happy that they did because I don't know if y'all know, but I also host this podcast called Scream Queen.
Never heard of her.
A podcast about scary movies from people not typically depicted in scary movies. And it's talking about scary movies from like an indigenous and queer and black perspective with me and my co-host Drea Washington. And we talked a lot about this short and whether or not we wanted it to be one of the segments on our show.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we'll definitely be incorporating the feature when it does come out.
Amazing. That's such a good dessert.
This episode of Food for Thought is made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and our new home at iHeartRadio. Our producer is technically a tortellini, Alexandra De Palma.
A tortellini! A spicy pepperoni!
Our production manager is technically a mango white claw, Elizabeth D. And our social media manager is technically Jennifer Aniston, Christina Tucker. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or Dennis Wears Bootcut Jeans.
Oh, wow. What's he? They're in right now, right, Fran? They're in?
They are. I feel like they're coming back in.
They're in.
Oh, no. Hi, I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. You can find me at Hey Teebs, HeyTeebs on all relevant social media.
I'm Fran. You can find me at Fran Squish Co. on anything you want.
I'm Dennis, and you can find me on Twitter at The Earl Denden, TheEarlDenden.
And I'm Joseph Osmondson. You can find me at www.josephosmondson.com.
Find us on Instagram as Gay Sluts Who Read, and join us on Facebook and Twitter at Food for Thought Pod, where each week we pin some questions at the top of our page to continue the discussion of this week's main topic. Sign up for our newsletter to see a list of everything we're reading and some extra at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. And finally, send your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dick pics to thoughts@foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thoughts spelled how?
T-H-O-T.
Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Thank you.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.